We are reflecting this month on what it means to be a people of prophecy. The prophet, people like Isaiah, who wrote those words, "Let justice roll," and Micah and the rest of the Hebrew prophets and others, they speak truth to power. They read the signs of the times and interpret the world in light of the transcendent values of life. How shall we imagine the world we share to be different than it is? The prophet speaks, they point, they imagine a new world, a new way, and they say, this where we are, this is not all there is. The Universalist minister Clinton Lee Scott said of prophets, "Always it is easier to pay homage to prophets than to heed the direction of their vision." He said, "Grandchildren of those who stoned the prophet sometimes gather up the stones to build the prophet's monument." Amen to that. Someone comes along and is a prophet. They speak truth to power. They say what needs to be said. Love your enemies. Everyone is a child of God. Just to name some examples. And then the power comes along and they say, "Oh, wait, what they really meant was go to war for me. Some are holy and some are not." A prophet comes along. They say, "A law which is unjust should be disobeyed." They say, "War is unjust." They say, "A living wage is a human right." They say, "The riot is the cry of the unheard." They say, "We cannot be patient for change." They say, "No one has disappointed me as much as the white moderate." They march. They lead boycotts. They shut down highways. They agitate. They go where they are not welcome and speak what others do not want to hear. And they are deeply unpopular. In 1966, only 12% of Americans rated Dr. King highly favorable. 50% of white Americans said that he was hurting the cause of African Americans. That was before he took on the Vietnam War, before he added pro-unionization and anti-poverty to his cause. He was reviled, a troublemaker, an agitator, impatient, aggressive. Why couldn't he just let things be? Grandchildren of those who stoned the prophet sometimes gather up the stones to build the prophet's monument. I want to start here with the radical, disruptive, reviled Dr. King. I want to say, as the Dixie Chicks put it, that I'm not ready to play nice. I want to say that I do not expect it to go well or easy. That there will be those moments when the buoyancy of hope will be transformed into the fatigue of despair. I expect the work to be difficult. I expect the powers and principalities of evil, of racism and inequality, of ableism, of misogyny and patriarchy and their cousins, homophobia and transphobia, I expect that they will be resilient, adaptable, and seductive. I expect that the powers that be will call for patience, for civility, for accepting the meager scraps passed down from the high table. And so I know that we who are a people of prophecy, who are ready to challenge these systems of oppression, who are not okay with it, we who wish to overcome, will have to be resilient and adaptable, and if not seductive, at least compelling. We will have to summon our deepest strength. We will have to care for our spirit. We will have to be accountable to each other. We will have to be wise as serpents and strong as a mighty stream. We will have to trust that there is a stronger force than hatred, and that that force is love. Not sentimental, not cloying, not naive, a love for one another and for ourselves that comes from our deepest core, from our ancestors, and for the sake of our descendants. We will have to be okay with not being liked. I recognize here, I will say, my great privilege, and I thank you for it. You expect me to cause trouble, to speak out. It is what the ministers of this church have done since Augustus Conant railed against slavery in 1857. So it's easier for me than for some of you. I'm glad you expect it. But it does not make me the most popular minister in town. Last November, the Rockford Chamber of Commerce once again honored 40 leaders under 40. My last chance to win, I thought. This is going to be the year, but of course, it wasn't going to happen. It didn't. Last month or so, the newspaper had a forum on race. Many of you were there. I made a bit of a stink at the forum about their focus on personal behavior over against structural racism. So did a pastor friend of mine, Ricky Bates. But I still volunteered after the forum to be on the ongoing group they were going to convene to plan next steps. I haven't been asked. And I very much doubt that I will be. Neither, I'm sure, will Pastor Bates. And it's not that folks at the paper or at the chamber are bad people. Even some folks who don't like racism or injustice think it's about personal opinion, not systems of power. We don't want to go deep. We don't want to think structurally. We don't want to acknowledge that for some it's never gone well. We don't want to hear what Anthony Anderson's character says about chains and boats and poverty and the persistence of oppression, about what it means to love your country when it doesn't always love you back, about strange fruit. We know there will be those moments when the buoyancy of hope will be transformed into the fatigue of despair. And we don't want to deal. It's hard. So we turn away into the distractions of the moment, into our own private lives and our own personal bubbles. Let me be very clear. It is okay to take care of yourself. It is okay to find joy and beauty in life, to love your loved ones, because you need to do those things, because the well of your spirit needs water. That's not what I'm talking about when I say that we turn away. I'm talking about refusing to see history and reality for what it is. I'm talking about thinking that the arc of history will bend without effort, without your effort. And I'm talking about looking for easy villains, making it personal, not structural. When we think that racism is about individual racists instead of a system of power, when we think inequality is about some greedy capitalists instead of the way things are built, this is a way of turning away. When some people think that electing Barack Obama meant that racism was over, it is a way of turning away. When some people make Donald Trump the embodiment of all that they oppose, this is a way of turning away, thinking that if you stop him, you win. This is a way of ignoring reality. It is a way of outsourcing our own role in these systems to a scapegoat. It's his fault, not ours altogether. If we think that every Hillary voter was an anti-racist feminist and every Trump voter a racist sexist, if we think this, this is a way of turning away. This is a way of not seeing the work that is before us. This is a way of avoiding the deep, the hard, the way we must imagine something larger, a new world, not fighting over the scraps of the one we have. The work of the prophet is larger than the news cycle of the day. Our work is about the spirit of human dignity, about spreading love and justice, about speaking truth to power, not for minutes, but for years, for generations. So where do we go from here? In not being able to stand it, writes the amazing poet Nikki Giovanni of Rosa Parks, she sat down. This Martin Luther King weekend before the inauguration, in the midst of the long story, the long arc from violence to peace, from bondage To freedom, the story not yet finished, the march ongoing, the song still being sung, where do we go from here? In not being able to stand it, she sat back down. She got in the way. She was troublesome, non-cooperative, accountable to others, strategic and timely. She did not come out of nowhere. She was prepared. She sat down. Where do we go from here? We sit down when we are told to move aside. And we lift every voice and sing when we are told to be silent. We love those we are told to ignore. And we love the possibility of this country even when it doesn't live up to it. And we practice democracy even when it is hard. And we care about facts even when they are inconvenient. And we sit down when we are told to move aside. When we can't stand it. We disrupt the flow. We are the skunk of justice at the garden party of oppression. Put that on my... That's what I want. We ask difficult questions. We are grounded in the struggle. We search our own heart. We educate ourselves, not just by reading headlines. We listen to each other deeply. We find common ground, not political compromise, but heart-to-heart common ground with those who some would call our enemies, but we know they are our siblings. There will be those moments when the buoyancy of hope will be transformed into the fatigue of despair. But despair is not our choice. Despair is a way out. It is turning away. Are we there yet? No. Are there setbacks? Yes. Is it as bad as it once was? No. Can we make it better still? Yes. Can we afford to be naive? Can we afford to be cynical? No. In his farewell, the president spoke of the dangers to democracy, inequality, racism, polarization, apathy. And he ended where he began, a belief that we can accomplish great things, that hope is realistic, that the future can be shaped for good, and that we can learn to live not in uniformity, but in solidarity. Hope. And some on the left, some of you probably, I know some of my colleagues and my friends, they wondered, really? After all that he's seen? And the challenges of inequality and racism and polarization and apathy? How can he be hopeful? How can we? And I do not wish to demean that doubt. Naivete will not serve us. If this election was the first time you were outraged, well, welcome aboard. Some of us have been here for a while, but we're glad to have company. But we still have hope. We haven't given up. But the choice to have hope, to believe in the future and to work for it, to face the rising sun of the new day and march till victory is one that choice isn't decided by the events of the day. It is decided by our hearts. It is decided by our faith. Our faith, our fidelity to the power of love to forever be surprising us, for the stirrings of justice to move us, for the claim of human dignity to spring always in the soul. This faith, this belief in hope has been held and breathed and embodied in our republic by imperfect people. Women and men and folk who struggled to bring their own lives and their country up to the great vision of justice and freedom they could articulate at their best. Jefferson, Adams, Franklin, Emerson, Alcott, Anthony. Pete Seeger, who sang to Dr. King, "We Shall Overcome" at the Highlander Center, same place Rosa Parks was trained, who sang that, all those folks, Unitarians and Universalists. They helped make this country. 2 days after John Lewis and others had been beaten on Bloody Sunday, many Unitarian Universalist ministers, a larger percentage per capita than any other denomination in the country, including the Reverend James Reeb, went to Selma to march. That night after the march, Reeb and two other of his colleagues were set upon by a band of white supremacists, and Reeb was murdered. His death, the death of a white minister, is what it took for Johnson to speak on TV, "We shall overcome." Reeb believed and gave his life for the hope of democracy and justice, and we wish it had not taken the death of a white man to get people's attention, but that is what it did. When black folks sat at that lunch counter in Greensboro, North Carolina, only one group of white folks in town supported them, the Unitarian Church. Obama's sense of hope, his faith in human possibility, was learned in Sunday school at the Unitarian Church in Honolulu, where his grandparents took him each week that he lived there. I point all this out not to brag on us, but to say that this is our prophetic role. We play the part of hope. That is our script. We sing the song of progress. The tuba player should not try to play the harpsichord part, and the bass will be challenged to sing the soprano. Our part of prophetic work is to be hopeful. We believe that it can be better, and to do what we can to bend the arc. We shall not be perfect, but we shall advance the cause. Our task is to read the signs of the times and to see what is real and to not turn away, to not be distracted by the ups and downs of the day, but to build in this time and in this place a community of love and justice, inspiring those here to follow their conscience, to sing for freedom, and when you cannot stand it, to sit down, to refuse to move from what you know is true, to refuse to be silent when the Spirit says sing, to wish for, to make real freedom for everyone, without exception, without exception. We shall overcome. This is a prophecy, not a guarantee, but a possibility. A hope, a dream, a longing, and a goal. We sing not to reassure ourselves that it will happen without our work. No. We sing to resolve ourselves to come alive, to march, to sit, to rise, to love, to struggle, to learn, to reach out, to love again, to make it true. We shall overcome. Deep in our hearts, we do believe. We shall overcome someday. May we help make it so. Let us sing.